Hello, freaks, and welcome to Radical Research. Monumentums in absentia Christi, a Radical Research Christmas episode.
Love it. It's like Christmas without Christ.
Mass, miss. I call it muss. We would call it muss in Iowa. I don't know about you guys down there in Georgia, but
Christmas.
we take the Christ out of Christmas,
You take
muss.
the great, yeah, it's just must. Yeah.
Anyway.
It's a must episode.
Well, this is a fun, happy album. So no, so when this topic came up, I think you had been pushing for this one for a while, and I was always into this album. And then we heard that both Chris Dick and Albert Mudrian, both very much associated with Decibel, obviously, were really excited. And then we were like, oh, Euronymous used to be really excited too. Like, why haven't we covered this? And
It used to be.
used to be, yeah, something, yeah, 25 stab wounds. Yeah. Anyway. Yeah, I thought it was a great idea, but like, what? I'm so curious before we launch into what it is all about. What's your entry with this band and this, certainly this album? I think almost everybody's entry was this and not the demo.
Yeah, no, it was definitely this for me and not the demo. Just, it was Mamarella, avant-garde. And it was just so, everything about it was just so weird. And I don't even think it's a metal album exactly. In fact, I've been wrestling with this album for almost 30 years now, and I still don't quite know what to call it. But it continues to just fascinate me. And it's elusive and brilliant and beguiling always. And that, I think that's the thing that continues to compel me about it, is that I don't really know what to do with it. You know what I mean?
For sure. And they were around for 2 years before Museum Hermeticum came out, the demo. And I didn't latch onto that at the time. I've since come to love it. That's to me what makes them a metal band. And then what, 6 fraught years later, they come out with their first album. And it's different, but the same. It certainly shaves off the roar, the My Dying Bride, almost proto My Dying Bride in a way. It kind of gets into that world. But yeah, anyway, so you mentioned Roberto. We got to kind of remind people if they don't know. Roberto Mamarala is the musical genius behind Monumentum. Am I being too hyperbolic there or yet?
No,
Okay.
I don't think so.
So he's the
Well,
musical
and also
genius.
a visionary label president too, and curator
Exactly.
of great artists. So
Yeah, I want to we'll mention that in a second. I want to mention the other guys though. The thing about Roberto was that he had these great conspirators. Like I really think the vocalist in Monumentum is really important. And you can go down the list of like the other two main conspirators on this album. But yeah, interesting, really interesting band that just really talented, a lot of vision, a lot of questions. So Roberto Mamarella, before we get into the first couple tracks, was Obscure Plasma Label at first, which is one of the best label names of all time for a record label. Obscure Plasma. I mean, a good band name, be a good album title.
well, it would have been, ruined it for all of us.
And then what, 94, 95, he starts Avant-Garde Music, which fuck, we love. We could do a show on that label for sure.
There might be
They
one
need
day.
focus. Yeah, they deserve focus. But Re and Roberto's great. I've had some contact with him over the years, way back, 90s and into the aughts, and always a really wonderful guy, just driven, passionate. Anyhow, let's listen to the first two from In Absentia Christi, the first two tracks of this 10-song album, Battissimo Nero Opaco and A Thousand Breathing Crosses.
Talk about a great song title.
A Thousand Breathing Crosses.
Yes.
For sure, man.
Man.
Oh, And Battissimo Nero Opaco translates to baptism opaque black. I looked that up earlier tonight, which tells you about everything you need to know about their aesthetic.
Thank you. So it's an oddly paced record.
Oh, yeah.
It distends and contracts in really surprising ways. Obviously it culminates with a very big song. But yeah, it takes quite a bit of patience to get into it. And I love that about it. It behaves in a way that almost no metal record that I know, and again, I struggle to call it a metal record. I think that probably does it a bit of disservice. But the way that it acts is unlike anything else in that genre, as far as I'm concerned. I am reminded, even though it came out a year later, I'm reminded of the way that Turn Loose the Swans opens, and
Oh,
then
talk about distended and kind of an unapproachable sequence at first. And
like
they toyed, not to deviate too much, but they toyed with that on As the Flower Withers.
that's true
That
too.
was a weird
Sure.
beginning too. Like you're like this,
Yeah.
and go back to the EP, which is still my favorite thing they've ever done. Fuck it, man. I mean, it does just doesn't get better. But anywho, yeah. Now I was going to mention Anathema because A Thousand Breathing Crosses has that. If Anathema went even darker and more spectral and psychier around, I don't know, maybe After Eternity, might
Yeah.
sound a little something like that. That started to get dreamy, and I think there's this album is definitely a dream. Like this feels
Oh, I mean,
like,
look at the cover.
look at the cover. Right,
I
exactly.
mean, it is, everything is out of focus. Everything is otherworldly. Yeah, completely.
We
Yeah, you're
certainly
right.
don't understand. How have you interpreted this like bulge-bellied baby that I always see on the front here? I mean, is this Christ? Certainly is in the crucifixion pose with the arms,
Yeah.
but it's also like so it's almost comical. You're not even sure.
It's odd. It's very
I
odd. But
love it.
even the background is even more confounding. Like
Well, that right.
I don't understand what the it again, it's like you said, it's spectral and yeah, but it's just this odd baby. I assume that it is baby Christ that is, yeah,
If we
it's
look to
like
the left, if we look to the left in the background, it does look sort of like a vulva.
yeah,
I
it
just
does.
realized that. Now, is
I
that
mean, it's
Mary?
like,
Is
yeah.
that Mary? And is the right, that weird cavern, is that God? I'm just saying. I don't know.
Look, Mike Browning's like, all right, look, I'm a couple of years too late. I got the time machine going.
You bring up
I'm gonna kill him
BCAD more
now.
than. You bring BCAD up more than, anybody on the Decibel staff, speaking of those great dudes, Albert and Chris. I mean, you're like, whoo. I mean, I love it. I'm just saying that song,
Hilarious. It's
the
just like
concept. Yeah.
a hilarious concept to me.
Right. Destroy that manger, buddy. You destroy that manger.
Didn't realize that I brought it up that often. I'm sorry.
I don't tr
I haven't mentioned Rune Magic in like 20 episodes.
Okay, we got the radical research statistician on the case here. We'll get the audience that metric in a week. Do you remember like the first 15 episodes that we did, like for no real planned or reason, but it's understandable. There was so much talk about the flute.
There was a lot of flute talk.
We were like, God, we like a lot of music with flute. And I mean, dude, it's it works. So when it works, it's amazing.
Sure.
It's like anything, it could be bad.
Yeah.
So back to this amazing album. The other thing I want to say about sequencing before we move on is I do think this album is modeled after Into the Pandemonium and Celtic Frost, and I will go ahead and say Celtic. I think that the intention for Into the Pandemonium was jarring from the start. Like you did not really understand what the album was till maybe after side one was over. Then you're like, oh, okay, we're going to go on a wild ride. And then they give you the second side, which gets perhaps even wilder. I think Monumentum is totally built on Celtic Frost and especially Pandemonium.
Oh yeah. Well, I mean, and we've talked about this before, but that's pretty much year zero for avant-garde metal, I think.
Our we one stat, I'm not just joking here, but one stat I know about our podcast is that episode 50 was definitely the Pandemonium episode. The next one, dude, you picked the snippets on this one. Get us in there.
Yeah, Consuming Jerusalem, another incredible song title. But this is where the album really starts to take flight, I think. So why don't we give it a bit of a listen?
Merry Christmas, man.
Merry Christmas, Jeff. Nothing brings me quite into the spirit of the season like hearing the sound of Jerusalem being consumed.
Absent indeed. Whoa.
if we didn't make our point about Celtic Frost clear enough,
Right.
also in to your point earlier, Fields, and also obviously Roz Williams and Early Christian Death, but yeah,
It's all there.
all
It's all
happening.
there. Yeah, in a wonderful way. In a new way. Like, this is definitely through the filter of metalheads inspired by Celtic Frost that probably started listening deeply. I'm just gonna guess. I also wonder if disembowelment is anywhere in their interest. I would imagine it must be.
I'm sure. No, I actually thought that this is what I wish most funeral doom sounded like.
Oh, well, you got to it before I did. I had
Like,
that I had that thought when I was listening to it a couple months ago,
yeah,
kind of
like,
reacquainting, getting ready for this one, which was weird because I was in the most positive fucking mindset that I've been in since before the fire. And I knew it wasn't working necessarily for me. I know it's not clicking. I know it will. I know I love it, but I'm so in a good mood right now. And I have to savor this because it's been a fucking while since I've been this optimistic in life. And this album was not working for me. And then I started to get more time to really focus on listening to music again that
right.
week, whatever that was. And man, I listened to this pretty hard. And it's so transportive. It's so amazing.
Oh, dude. Funny
Yeah,
that
go
you
ahead.
would say that because I was having a very, well, I mean, I don't know that I've mentioned this, much on the podcast. I try to not to disclose too much about my personal life.
We'll get Johnny the statistician on this. So go ahead. Yeah. We'll find out how many times you do that.
Was having a very, very stressful week at work, and it was a very bleak morning. It was before the time changed, so it was like when I'd go to work at I'd leave here at 6:30 or thereabouts, and it was just pure darkness, and it was foggy, and I listened to this thing, and you talk about transportive, and I was like, man, if I could just like be dead and go to this place, that would be awesome. Now I'm thinking, it probably wouldn't be that awesome. Not sure I'd want to go there.
Thanks for sharing. That's relatable.
Think I wanted my Jerusalem to be consumed by
Right.
anything.
Hey man, we've all been there with the whole Jeru Kasu, it's
Hey
cool.
man. Hey man, what's your perspective on spiritual catharsis, bro?
Hey man, what's your favorite position? So, before we move on to Fade to Gray, which is an interesting choice, and again, I think a very into the pandemoniumism. I'm trying to coin something here in pandemoniumism on this album, which is a cover song, Fade to Gray. Now, before we get there, in the liner notes on the booklet, let's also mention that this came out on Misanthropy Records. Misanthropy was one of those labels that I'll bet you and I at the same time before we knew each other were pretty much buying anything we saw on that label.
Anything.
It was an earache, and for me back in the day, I'd say Metal Blade. Like if I was like, there's a lot of sketchy stuff in 86 and 87 on Metal Blade, but before that I was like, I'll go for any of that. I'll try any of that because they gave us so much, you know what I mean? Like Slayer, Fate's Warning, and I need not go on. Voivod. But yeah, so there's something in the liner notes here on this excellent Misanthropy CD that says, unsolicited guests did perform passively on this recording. We intend no harm. And I remember reading a few years later that that just meant they illegally took a sample from Lisa Gerrard, Deck and Dance. I think there's something of that within this album. This is just what I remember from some zine interview, which I don't have the zine. I haven't read it forever. I don't remember the others, but there were definitely some cool others, as I recall. It could have been shit. It could have been Coil. You know what I mean? Like it could have been something of that world. So I love that they're like embedding these things that aren't even legal into the art. Like they're actually sampling, but just not giving exact credit.
I love it too.
And then they jump out on track four with a song called "Fade to Gray." This is a cover. We'll let you listen to it. If you don't know who it's a cover of, we'll of course discuss all that when we get back.
Éternel, reprend les notes de chansons lointaines.
I first got into this album, which was pretty much when it came out. We'll talk about Euronymous and Mayhem and Norway later, but there was this huge buzz, partly because of who loved it in Norway. And so there's that. But when it came out, it had to be heard. There was enough of a buzz that people into the music that we were into, even whether it was dark or death or, non-metal, metal, goth, prog, whatever. So it was pretty well hyped. And I remember when I got into it, I didn't know that was a cover. I looked into the booklet quite a bit, but I didn't like read every single word, maybe. Certainly read the credits, maybe not all the lyrics yet. So my first listens, I didn't know Fade to Gray was a cover. And when I found out, I was a little disappointed. Then I heard the original, which is by, oh boy, was it 1981, a band called Visage? I've only heard the name. They were a thing in that new wave early to mid 80s, which we have great interest in. I mean, I've definitely delved a lot into that world. That'd also be a good episode. I listened to the original and thought, yeah, I think the Monumentum version's better. It's one of those covers. I mean, Astronomy Domine by Voivod, I think it's better than the Pink Floyd original. There aren't many covers that kind of best the original. What do you know about Visage and the Fade to Gray?
I mean, not a ton. So, like Astronomy, it fits into the album so seamlessly that you don't really think about it being a cover.
Right.
I don't know a lot about Visage. I've heard the original. I do think this is better. I actually think this sounds like something that could have been on Within the Realm of a Dying Sun. That's
Wow.
what it sounds like to me.
Yeah.
It amplifies all of those epic Romanesque kind of qualities, and I just think it they make it their own, which is what
So,
really kind of the goal of a cover, I think.
I think it should always be. There are two that come. Here's a diversion we'll take. Let's just do it. Sorry, Mamarella, if you're listening, we'll get back to your genius and everything else. I think of two straight up covers like that sound basically like the original that I really like, because there's a ton I hate. There's a ton I'm like, why the fuck? One of them is Westworld's Neon Nights, and hearing Tony Harnell rip up the fucking Dio era Sabbath in a way that just proves that Tony Harnell is incredible. Go listen to it. His Neon Nights by Westworld. It's amazing. I don't know if you agree with that. It's not better than the original. I'm not saying that. I'm saying it's straight and it's awesome. Like they don't do anything to it. The other straight cover I love is Ace of Spades on Abattoir's first album. It's the side one ender. And it just works. It's violent LA metal. It's so and melodic, and it's so
Violent
good, man.
LA metal. I love it.
But melodic. It was Abattoir to me, where like heavy metal meets the first Exodus album. Like they were just sort of in this
Oh, yeah.
special moment. I love the first Abattoir. That's a fascination of mine. But anyway, Ace of Spades there. It's not that different, but it's so good. It's just and why? That's like covering Rock and Roll All Night. Why? You're never gonna sort of top what the legend of the original. Just don't.
So I'll tell you two of mine, straight up covers that I absolutely love.
Right on. Little 0.5. This is like 138.5 within
Oh, yeah.
130. But it's fucking blowing everybody's
This
minds,
is a
man.
nested 0.5. How about that? That's some
Nested.
fucking progressive shit. Yeah. Yorn doing Naked City.
But it's less straight. Like there are attributes of the Kiss version, and I love the Kiss version. That's a rare bright spot, rare legendary spot on Unmasked. Naked City on the original is fantastic, and I think it's got enough production and performance differences that I wouldn't call it a straight up cover.
Really? All right.
Yeah. Plus, wasn't it not on a studio album? It was on a
It's
covers
not
album.
on a studio album. It's on the cover.
Okay. I'm not trying to deny you, because I will tell you and I agree. Sorry, Marty. That version of Naked City is incredible.
It is.
Yeah, it's one of my favorite pieces of music. Like, it's amazing.
Also,
Yorn, okay, Naked City. Sorry, brother. I didn't mean to sidetrack you, but
no.
you
And then
sit by the.
Opium Trail on John Norum's Face the Truth.
Oh my God.
Which is a pretty straight up Thin Lizzy version.
That's a really good one, man. That's true.
And it is
Yeah.
banger.
I remember hearing that for the first time going into it. I was already into Thin Lizzy, and I got into Thin Lizzy like in end of my time in Maniacs, like early 2000s. It took me a little while. When it caught like fucking crazy. They're like one of the best bands of all time. But when I heard the John Norum one for the first time, being a Europe fan, I love the first two Europe albums. I thought, well, this is pointless. This is going to be shit. You know what I mean? And it fucking rules. It's it's fantastic.
It is
And
fantastic.
that's one of Thin Lizzy's best songs, in my opinion. I mean,
Totally.
how cool can a song get? How cool can rock and roll get? And fucking then
It
Phil
can be
Lynott it.
technical.
I mean, that's the yeah. He and that band are the epitome of fucking cool.
Oh God, Phil, dude.
Coolest Homo sapiens ever. Number one. Number one. Number one.
Dude.
Coolest. All right, so let's go back to Monumentum. I hope Mamarella likes Thin Lizzy.
Yeah, me too.
Let's listen to the fifth song. This is effectively ends what we'll call the first side. This is definitely a CD listen. This 50-minute album. This is a bit called On Perspective of Spiritual Catharsis. The second longest song on the album at about 7.5 minutes.
Sounds like a disharmonic orchestra title.
Merry Christmas, man.
Merry Christmas to you, Jeff.
As you sit by the hearth, the dried oak crackling, that's On Perspective of Spiritual Catharsis.
My flesh burning.
Your flesh burning. That's metal. I'll give that song metal.
Fuck your chestnuts.
Fuck your chestnuts. That's metal. Here's another album that came out in 1995. Speaking of metal, The Silent Enigma by Anathema. These bands absolutely shared so many influences. I will even say more so than My Dying Bride and Paradise Lost, because we've mentioned My Dying Bride already. Obviously, I think in the Monumentum conversation, you have to talk about the quote unquote Peaceville Three. Anathema all over the place on this album for me, especially on Spiritual Catharsis.
I think of those three bands, Anathema wore their Celtic Frost influence on their
Oh,
sleeve.
yeah. No doubt, no doubt. The making of this album, their debut, and they only had two. We'll talk incredibly briefly about the second one. This was a fraught process, and it took quite a while to kind of conceive. I mean, as we said, the demo came out in 89. This came out in 95. In the booklet, the band notes, recorded and mixed in 156 exhausting hours from August 1994 to May 1995, end quote. So exactly 156 hours. And again, quote, all music created by Roberto Mamarella, except where noted, during six tormenting years from 1990 to 1995. This all pretty much tracks, right?
Yep. It sounds very labored too. Not in a self-conscious or indulgent way, but it sounds like somebody really working toward the God, what I'm trying to say here.
Well, I mean, apotheosis, was it like, okay, we have one shot, we're gonna fucking knock it out of the park.
It's
Like
like
they
but it was like the vision was there, but it was it's just we're working toward this one idea that
Yeah.
has to be conceived and presented in its ideal form.
Right. They were going big.
It's ambitious.
I would say they got about 99% there. There's nothing I can say about this album I don't like. I just am not sure I'd call it a perfect album. I don't hold it on quite as high a level as Into the Pandemonium, but I'm fucking crazy for that album. That's one of those few albums that, I mean, even after The Fire, dude, I think I have four copies of that now, four various different versions that are singular and different from one another, where I'm like, I can't get rid of any of these. Like that album, but this is good. This is really, and okay, you and I had talked earlier about talking about the reviews on Metal Archives. The one review on Metal Archives gives it a 99%. So I'm with that.
Right.
I'm with that person. But what you brought this up to me today, you were like, can you believe it doesn't have more?
It's just so odd. Like, I would think this record would have get multiples of reviews.
At least 10.
Yeah, like this thing is a legendary work.
I know it. Well, let's talk about that a second before we move on. It's got such an interesting history with Mayhem and that whole Norwegian black metal wave, the wave that turned into what you and I founded this podcast on, which was Norweird. But you know, Euronymous was a fan of Museum Hermeticum, the 89 demo. He signed Monumentum to his Death Like Silence Productions label before Roberto even had a note written for the album. I mean, that's truth. That's verified. That's funny,
Right.
right? I love how that fits in metal history. I love the enthusiasm between those two guys. Those guys had a love for each other for sure. But then this gets better. I read a recent Bardo Methodology interview with Roberto, and that's a plug absolutely for Bardo Methodology. People have to check out Bardo Methodology. It's the best reading on music and metal you'll have probably in the last 10 years. I think it's amazing. And you're on board with me. But I've become a crazy fan for that guy and that zine. But anyway, so I'm reading that about a few weeks ago, and he reminds me that at that moment that Euronymous signed this album and this band to Death Like Silence, Euronymous then told Marmarella, I don't have the funds to support the recording of the album. Like that was basically the conversation. But you got to remember how skint everything was back then. You were doing it on a shoestring budget. It was super cult, super specialist stuff. But they're enthusiastic as shit about it, right? So he tells Roberto, hey, I got this recording of us in Leipzig, Germany. Put this out as Live in Leipzig. And with that, the profits, you can record the Monumentum album and I'll put that out. I mean, that is one savvy businessman.
Yeah,
Holy
no.
shit.
Yeah, I mean, like, I don't know if I would call that savvy business because you're basically just exchanging one thing for another. But I appreciate the strategy.
It's quid pro quo.
Yeah, it is. He's just not making any money. So.
Well, and this is great because then Live in Leipzig was released by Obscure Plasma, Roberto's label, became a classic in the Mayhem catalog. Like that's one of the best live albums of all time. I think it's Craig Zahler's
Oh, God, it's
number
incredible.
one. Apparently, though, it came out like July 93, and Euronymous never saw it because he was killed the next month. Roberto was by letter. They had decided, hey man, I'll come to your Helvetia store and I'll deliver the copies and all that. And he was like, great. And he goes up to do that with this handful of life in Leipzig, and read in Norwegian, and then had to have somebody translate on these on the newspapers that were all over the place. Like the shit had just basically went down, and the media took hold of it with Euronymous's death. And so Roberto's up there with a handful of these live mayhem records, and that was his experience. Like I didn't get to give it to him because I got there just like a couple days too late. Isn't that fucking crazy, man?
That's nuts.
He was also one of the people that got the pieces of dead skull. I've told tales of my meeting with Masmasheim from Samael, who is one of those people, and how Masmasheim delivered it. I was like, you gotta be kidding me. He's like, I thought it was a cookie. He thought Euronymous sent him little bits of a cookie when he like fingered the envelope before he opened it. So anyway, but yeah, apparently Mummarella was one of the people that got bits of the skull, and Mummarella was said in that Bardo methodology interview that he's unsure if it was a suicide or a murder. And that's about all I'll say there. You can dig it up on Bardo. Interesting stuff. He said, I showed up in front of the closed down Helvetia, then saw pictures of Euronymous in Norwegian newspapers, trying to understand a fucking word, only to realize that I arrived a little too late for everything. Man.
That's heavy, man.
That's heavy. We're going to go into the next song, the sixth song, quoting a dedication that's in the booklet. Quote, a special remembrance to the soul that which 25 knife wounds presented from completing this big dream of ours. This is a Greek song with Greek letters. We don't know what it means. How's that for radical research?
We don't.
Pretty disappointing.
You know what? We also embrace the unknown.
Merry Christmas, Hunter.
Merry Christmas, Jeff. So the female singer, Francesca Nicoli, she is deployed somewhat sparingly throughout the album, but I think very impactfully when she does appear, especially in this tune. It's actually one of my favorite songs on the entire album. It's got this Mediterranean heat about it. It feels ecstatic and visionary and mystical. I think it's a really, really powerful piece of music.
I can't really much add to that.
Merry Christmas, Jeff.
Thanks for getting me off the hook. No, I love it too. It's almost too easy to bring in Dead Can Dance comparisons, but this album's definitely highly inspired by that. I also, there's more project vibes, project label.
Oh yeah, that's a great point, man. It's a great,
Yeah.
yep.
It's there. It's there. It's obviously got that Celtic Frost root. It's obviously got that root in the earliest, darkest, weirdest metal. I continue to hear the Peaceville Three throughout.
Well, Gothic had that same kind of thing.
Yeah, for sure. For sure.
Yeah.
I want to move on to From These Wounds because this 7-minute song, I think it starts with some of the best lyrics on the album. And before we even recite those, we got to give credit to Andrea Zanetti and Francesca Nicoli, the vocalists on this album, formidable. Paolo Mori, the samples, artistic production, and wisdom. Interesting credits to that guy. And Max Christodoro on percussions. And Roberto himself is credited with strings, keys, and vibes. From These Wounds begins with some of the best lyrics on this album. Souls in gangrene, deformed human projections, moving but not living on sanguine vibrations. Your pseudo-lives, please follow my tedious call, vertical pain.
Okay.
Yeah, it's it, yeah. So
I wish
let's
I
do
could
that.
like go back to like 7th grade and write that to a girl I had a crush on.
I think we've told the big dumb sex story about two times. So we'll get the statistician on Johnny on that. Johnny, the radical research
Wasn't
statistician.
bringing that up again. So I'm just saying that maybe this would have gone better.
Wanna. Yes, right?
Yeah.
From these wounds. That to me shows the limits, and I've again, we'll get Joe the statistician on it, or Johnny the statistician on it, but it just goes to show that like playing snippets is sometimes a danger in what we do. We'll keep doing it because that's how we want to do it, but like a listen to the full album all the way through, and there's no album that's more listenable all the way through in terms of that one sit down, focus, listen than this one. You do not take this one in pieces, and so. Listening to that bit from From These Wounds reminds me that like where that song goes from there is amazing, and we just don't get to savor it. It's part of the thing. So, your thoughts, since you picked the snippet there.
Yeah, I thought that was a really cool section of it. But yeah, I'm with you. Like, the album has, it ebbs and it flows and it's dynamic, but it has a very uniform mood about it.
Oh yeah.
It's very thematic. And I agree with you entirely. Like, this is not something where you just pick one song. It
Right.
demands to be listened to in its entirety.
Let's go move to Terra Mater Offernorum. I really should have contacted Chris Ayers, our resident Latin teacher, who helped us with what episode did he help us with? There was a lot in Latin on one episode once.
Yeah, there was.
Remember? And I contacted Chris, and he helped us out so much. We'll get back to, well, again, Johnny the statistician.
Statistician, yeah.
All your Patreon donations are paying off. We could hire a statistician part-time. It's great. Doesn't have health insurance, but we're hoping
Just
for.
a like, I love that we're gonna hire a statistician to help two like aging guys with bad memories.
When that starts, that snippet anyway, it reminds me that, okay, maybe this is not a perfect album because they've kind of given us that before. Like, this is nothing new. And then,
And then,
right? It gets into what reminds me of later, some of the later Blue Dust Nord, especially the latest one, Ethereal Horizons, like this really just textured, beautiful, psychedelic black metal. I mean, it gets there. And again, this is where Monumentum is. Still a metal band. Yeah, I love that moment. I love how it hangs there and then just picks up again, moves on. I just feel like that last refrain is so beautiful. One of the most beautiful things, not only on the album, but like in this genre. That's just amazing. So, again, not perfect album, but 99.5%.
Hey,
Yeah.
it's 99% of the way there. So it
Yeah.
reminded me, just listening to it now, of Third and the Mortal.
Spot on. Yeah.
And I'm
I
like,
think.
yeah, this is like an honorary Norwegian album in a way, you
Dude,
know.
I just had a great
But it makes
idea.
sense, like when, you know, we talked about Death Like Silence and all that, but yeah, it's just, yeah.
Of course. Yeah, no, of course. I feel like, and I'm going to keep this in, I won't edit this out. I feel like every time we mention Norway or any Norwegian reference, we should have a gong in the background, sort of as a marker of like, here it is again, this fucking thing with Norway.
Why are these guys so obsessed with Norway? Well, I mean,
Oh,
duh, because it rules.
we're gonna we've talked about it. We're gonna go there. I think we should go there late 2026. I want to go there. I want to. My first thought in Norway is like, I don't want to be there in the winter. And then I'm like, no, wait a minute.
Yeah, no.
I do want to be there in the winter.
Yes, I don't want to go in.
And you're a Georgian, you're a pussy with snow, but I'm an Iowan. I got you, brother. We will survive. We will have fun. Yeah.
No, I want to go in the absolute darkness. We'll do
Let's move
it.
on. So let's go back in history a little bit with Monumentum. In 91, that split came out on Obscure Plasma between Monumentum and Rotting Christ, which is very cool. It's a high dollar record. That split featured Monumentum doing a song called Nostalgia of the Infinite from Museum Hermeticum. It's the same version. Same thing with Naphtali. Sorry, Naphtali, Naphtali, which is the penultimate track on the album, making it the most enduring Monumentum song, really. You know, went through the demo, the split, and now a new version on this album. Let's listen.
Don't realize how slow the album is until that song.
You just blew my mind. You're
It
right.
is, the album is so slow. And that thing sounds like From Enslavement to Obliteration. I mean, it just sounds like it's hauling ass. Yeah.
I mean, and it makes sense because it's the earliest song, right? It comes from
Does, but it's just
that
like,
more energized metal band that they started as. That's an amazing observation. I think I knew that unconsciously, and you just sort of unlocked the consciousness of that. It was like, wow.
I love the placement of it too.
Yeah,
Like,
no, no, dude, it's perfect. It's
yeah.
perfect. It's perfect. And that's what I had in my notes. And I also, to add to that, but I can't, man, you just brought out the best part of not only that song, but that album. And I do like that that's the oldest Monumentum song. And it works in that way, right? It's sort of the climax of the album. It's
Yeah,
probably
totally.
my favorite Monumentum song. I think I've always thought that. I love that line, and she became a completely different woman. That's when we get back to the Christ thing, and I think about Mary. Yeah, she became a completely
Yeah,
different woman. Whoever that was in history, you know, I have some doubts in this area, strong ones, but I will tell you yes, whoever Mary was based on became a completely different woman at that moment. And I love that. It brings us around to that. And Merry Christmas. I mean, it really just
Merry Christmas, Jeff. A sworn enemy of the Virgin.
right. I am, you know. I suppose Euronymous was perhaps as well. Man, sworn enemy of the Virgin. That's the subtitle of this episode. So Monumentum's In Absentia Christi, A Radical Research Christmas, Sworn Enemy of the Virgin. That's funny. Okay. I mean, I think I love also that song and our enthusiasm for it. And like you said, the pace it brings up ends with a song called Lanoia. It's 9 minutes. Its first 5 minutes are what we can call maybe traditional song-ish. And then the last 4 minutes are this drone, this ambient moment that absolutely must be listened to. It's like a huge part of the experience. And I think going from what you term the fastest or least slowest of the tracks on this album, Lanoia brings to a kind of whole other world. It's like, maybe what the second album would sound like. We're going to close out with that snippet and just say goodbye. But did you ever check out their second album?
I did not.
Okay, I did. And I don't remember being blown away. And I think I dismissed it pretty quickly. This will make me bring it up. I'll have to listen to it because I know I love the demo. Museum is great.
Yeah, love the demo.
After this, they pretty much faded away, but not without. Do you know their history after this?
No.
They did various versions. They did a version on a split like years later. They did PJ Harvey's The River. And then much later, they put out an EP, I imagine digital only, of various versions of The River. It's like this weird fade out that they had. False Light was the split that had the PJ Harvey cover. Alternative Four was a band the split was with. Now, I wonder who they were influenced by.
I wonder.
Again, we talk about Anathema. Yeah, anyway. So, yeah, next episode, man, we're excited for the next two. And we have many, many, many ideas for the next probably 20. The next two will be definitely 139, Milwaukee's Realm, Say No More. But that's one where we both started talking about it and thought,
How have we not?
I know, it's just how have we not done this
In
Realm episode?
we are. We are sworn to the tech.
I know. Their 88 album, their 90 album. We will dip into the past with the Final Solution demo a little bit and a little bit into the future of that band with White Fear Chain, which dips into Last Crack territory. So Wisconsin metal coming right up. After that, the Norwegian band you and I haven't yet covered. Now, we've covered them when we've done exercises on two of the different singers, the only two singers this band's really ever had officially. ICS Vortex and of course Garm. We're gonna shed full light on the greatness of Arcturus in episode 140. This is the final track from Monumentum's In Absentia Christi. This is Lanoia. Thank you for joining us. We'll see you in 2026. This is the final episode of 2025. A year that certainly ended better for both of us than it started. I think we
Oh,
can.
yeah. Yes, absolutely.
I love you, brother.
Love you.
Oh, by the way, Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas. Stay a sworn enemy of the Virgin.
Enough goes, I fear death. But goes, I no longer see any difference between death and this life of mine, where nobody comes on to relieve me. Not even the sorrow. This is the first time that Tidium not only tires and weighs down on me. It's also worrying and killing me, just like the strongest of pains. I've got so frightened by the vanguard sharing of things and the condition of mankind. Death of every passion, as they are all dead in my heart, that I'm going to say that my despair itself isn't worth nothing. Farewell.